The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, it's all about Corona. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to avoid talking about it today, Howard.
Yeah, it's numbers in Israel a little alarming. I mean, that little bit of good news from Hadassah Hospital is amazing from Dr. Marburg.
The truth of the matter is that there are so many medical initiatives going on at the moment. And until such time as we actually see something coming out in volume, something which has got, a stamp on it and we can see a real improvement in the situation of people on an ongoing basis and in large numbers, it's very, very difficult to know where all of this goes. I mean, there are some very, very promising initiatives. What Dr. Marburg mentioned was just one of them. There are many others, both vaccines and treatments and all kinds of initiatives that are coming out. But they all seem to be in relatively early stages. So I think until such time as we see something coming out which has a real impact and being manufactured on a more extensive basis, I think it's difficult to jump to conclusions.
Yeah, I think that is true. All right, so I mean, they're calling it a second wave. To me, this whole thing, and I have to ask Dr. Marburg about it. It's irritating me because it's nonsense. It rate of infection decreased because of all of the lockdowns. Then everything opened up again, and because people are interacting, the numbers increased again. What is this fixation about the second wave, first wave? Wave 1.3, I don't even understand it.
Well, I think that the issue of whether it's a second wave or not is more political rather than factual. It is definitely another wave of infection. And, the interesting discussion that perhaps Dr. Marburg is better to have it with him than with me is whether the objective of the lockdown is really to decrease the rate of infection or whether it has other objectives. And I did hear something that he had said quite some time ago, a couple of months ago even, that the idea of the lockdown is really to allow a little bit of breathing space to get the medical facilities prepared enough to give them that breathing space, because the inevitable is going to happen. There are going to be people who are infected, and the question is whether medically we are ready to cope with that. And certainly in the winter months when there are already other lurgies going around, people getting ill from other things, needing hospitalization and medical treatment, when you're dealing with corona as well, it just becomes more of a burden to have to bear much more pressure on the medical system. So he at least put forward the idea that the lockdown was really all about allowing the medical system to prepare themselves. But I think that, unfortunately, with the number of increases in infections that we're seeing in Israel, apparently more than 500 new cases over the last day or so, and something like 1,300 or 1,400 new cases just this week, it seems as if there are a lot of the things that were learned during the initial lockdown period and during the initial infection period of this virus have really not been implemented now. Once we've gone to opening things up, people have become a little bit nonchalant. I don't know if that's the right word. But I don't think that we've really learned our lesson significantly enough. And so as a result of that, unfortunately, infection rates are going up. And there's an interesting case that's going to be held by the High Court of Justice, because the town of El Ad near to Tiberias has been declared a hotspot and was closed down by the government, put into severe lockdown. And they are contesting it, saying that they feel that it's unfair that El Ad has been singled out and that there are other places with similar rates of infection that have not been put into lockdown. And they've demanded of the government to understand what the criteria is that they are using to put places like El Ad into lockdown and why others are not being treated in a similar way. So there's all of this going on now. Instead of people saying, listen, we have got a severe outbreak. It might not be quite as bad as some other place. Let them deal with their worries and let us deal with our worries. We need to really lock down in order to control this, because the last thing we want is to have significant numbers of people ill, passing it on to other people, to allow people to circulate freely and to put severe pressure on the city, on the town, on the medical facilities. I think we just need to deal with it on a case-by-case basis. The idea is that we are not going back into lockdown. Corona hotels have been reopened. There's been a call up of IDF people, soldiers, reserved soldiers to help with all of this, the management of this once again, as was the case before. So there has certainly been a huge increase in activity to deal with the situation. What's quite pleasing for me, and I'm not sure if I'm perhaps speaking a little bit too soon here, in Hebrew they say, Lo liftoch pe le satan, don't open your mouth to Satan, to tempt fate. But what seems to me to be happening is that even though there has been a huge increase in the number of people who have been diagnosed and a slight increase in the people who have been hospitalized and intubated and considered to be seriously ill, unfortunately, the people who are dying from the virus has been, you know, the number of deaths so far has been very, very steady indeed. And we haven't seen a huge increase in people dying as a result of it. I don't know whether that means we know better how to treat it. That may well be something that we've learned from the previous wave, but I guess only time will tell.
And that's what's happening as we go along. So we're becoming more educated. We're certainly not there yet, but we have, and thankfully the doctors have made great strides in treating people. The Knesset Finance Committee has approved changes to the income tax legislation that will relieve the Prime Minister of taxes owed by him since 2009.
Yeah, I mean, this is the ongoing tax issue with the Prime Minister. It turns out that the Prime Minister has been receiving benefits from the state relating to his private residence in Caesarea, in Caesarea. And the laws in Israel say that when your employer pays you or provides you with a service which could also be used not only for business purposes but for your own personal use, you have to pay tax on that. It's as if though you're getting salary for that value, whatever the value of that service is, and you have to pay tax on that. Now, it seems as if though the Prime Minister has been claiming living expenses for relating to his private residence, which of course gives him personal use as well, and the income tax authorities have decided that he should pay tax on that. And they have claimed, not going back to 2009 because there is a statute of limitations, but certainly going back to 2014, and they've demanded something like $1 million shekels worth of tax for the benefits that he's received. Interestingly enough, even though the Prime Minister has been entitled to claim these living expenses, we are led to understand that previous Prime Ministers never did so, even though they were entitled to do so. They never took advantage of the fact that they were entitled to this. Prime Minister Netanyahu has done so, and apparently he is liable to pay tax. But this new decision by the Knesset Finance Committee actually puts the tax burden on the state. So what they've said is that instead of the Prime Minister paying the tax out of his own pocket, the state, his employer, will effectively gross up the value of the benefits that he's received, and the employer will effectively pay the tax. I mean, this grossing up concept is something that employers do. Like, for example, when an employer gives an employee a telephone, a mobile phone, to use for business purposes, and they're entitled to use it for personal purposes, and the employee is required to pay tax on that, the employer might say, I'm going to pay you the tax that you need to pay, so therefore the tax really falls on me. So the concept is not an alien concept. For the Prime Minister, it's a little strange, and particularly in this time when people are really struggling to come out at the end of the month, so many people being laid off, so many people at home on unpaid leave, lots and lots of pressure on the state coffers in order to try to give social benefits to those people who are struggling as a result of corona. And here the state is going to need to pay out something like $1 million shekels in order to cover the Prime Minister's tax bill. So clearly there are those people who don't feel particularly good about this decision.
A stash of Jordanian weapons believed to be about 50 years old have been excavated from below the Kotel tunnels. Wow.
I mean, this is a fascinating story because obviously this relates back to the kind of pre-state period or just after the state, and certainly during the time that the east side of Jerusalem was not under Israeli control, was under Jordanian control. And this is a stash of weapons that apparently are British made. They were found in an old water system that apparently served once upon a time served local Arab residents of the old city. They have been identified as Jordanian weapons, and they were just discovered in the course of ordinary excavations that were being conducted by the Israel Antiquities Authority underneath the Western Wall tunnels. Apparently, The weapons, obviously, the stash of weapons was there because of the conflict that existed at the time. And they must have just been stockpiled there and kind of forgotten about. And now they've been discovered. So it's an interesting discovery. It kind of just reminds us of the days, you know, pre the Six-Day War, pre-1967, when that part of Jerusalem, was under, non-Israeli control. But fortunately the police sappers who were called to the area managed to determine that the weapons were not of any danger to anybody. And of course, it's just an interesting piece of history that's been dug up here.
Mm. Yeah, it's absolutely incredible how it's never a dull moment in terms of finding things from the past in Israel.
Absolutely.
It's just
absolutely
quite an amazing.
And you know, that's always the case. I mean, that's why, you know, people who have, as their interest, you know, looking at old things and you know, excavating and antiquities and things like that, very frequently come to Israel on these action holiday, not action, but activity holidays, where they get involved in excavations and pulling out things. And you never know what you're going to find. It could be from the biblical era. It could be from, you know, the more modern era, as it has been the case in this one. But there's always, as you say, a lot of action and a lot of interest that you can find with things here.
Mm. Finally, Israeli supermarkets have been advertising certain food items for sale for only one shekel. What is
well,
this initiative?
This is, yeah, I mean, I think that this is just an attempt to recognize that people are really struggling economically at the moment, that it's not a simple time, even though many, many people have been fortunate enough to be able to continue working as usual from home, or not at home, but have returned to work already since the economy's opened up a little bit. And yet many people are either still sitting at home on leave without pay or have been laid off their jobs as a result of the economic hardships. I've noticed numerous restaurants that failed to reopen once they were entitled to reopen. So they'd been locked down, shut down. And then when the moment came for restaurants to reopen, quite a number of them, even in my local vicinity, just didn't reopen. I've noticed one or two of them now being refurbished and being restyled as something else. Unfortunately, people have found this whole lockdown situation to be economically very detrimental and very, very difficult indeed. And it's interesting that two supermarket chains, Victory and the Rami Levy supermarket chain, are both advertising chicken, bread and watermelon for the sale for one shekel. So chicken and watermelon for one shekel per kilo, as opposed to one shekel per chicken. You can now also buy a challah and sliced bread for only one shekel. Obviously, it's not unlimited. People are limited to one loaf, or in some cases you have to buy, I don't know, 100 shekels worth of other things in order to enjoy your one shekel per kilo watermelon. But it is extremely cheap, the equivalent of about R5, one shekel. So it's nice to go into the weekend and to go into Shabbat with a little bit of good news, especially for those people who've been suffering economically. And trust me, there are a lot of those around,
And certainly a global problem, very, very concerning indeed. The economic impact of COVID-19, I think, will remain with us for years and years, and it is the most vulnerable, those that are the most vulnerable, of course, that feel it first. Very scary indeed. On that note, unfortunately, we do have to leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. Shabbat shalom, stay safe and healthy, and we will speak to you on Monday morning.